This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, it's hour number three. Thanks for joining us as we continue on Sports Map Radio. So I've been talking last night's hockey game. And I'm not the biggest hockey guy in the world, but I got to give credit where credit is due. We're going to have Dennis Bernstein on coming up at 40 past the hour to go over the Eastern and Western Conference Finals. I was really blown away last night with how fun that game was, even though I knew I was watching something that just wasn't quite normal, something I should have actually kind of cringed at a little bit, given its sort of aberration from what a normal hockey game is like. An 8-6 hockey game is not something you see every day, let alone game one of a major playoff series that will determine the winner of the Western Conference. But nevertheless, there they were in Denver, lighting up the lamp and putting up goals in net. 13 different players scored 14 goals in a game between the Avalanche and the Oilers. That's how incredible it was. And as I said in hour number one this morning, even Wayne Gretzky, who said, you won't find a bigger offensive player than me, but you've got to play some defense. Which, by the way, we were watching the game last night with my wife, who's kind of more of a hockey fan than I am, and it blows me away given that she grew up in Florida, but she really likes the sport. And I gave her the very famous Wayne Gretzky stat about his assists alone would be give him the points. And she really couldn't believe that. She was like, that's unbelievable. And it was kind of nice to deliver that stat to somebody who did not know that before. Because I think it's the one stat even non-hockey fans, but sports fans in general, tend to know about Wayne Gretzky. But nevertheless, no defense. Didn't matter. The game was very entertaining. But I got to think both teams are going to try to figure out a way to tighten that thing up. But Tampa Bay and the Rangers are going on tonight at Madison Square Garden. Tampa Bay is trying to get to the Stanley Cup Finals for the third straight year, try to win it for the third straight year. And the Rangers are coming off a very, very long and very hard seven-game series with the Carolina Hurricanes, where they won Game 7. They took four of the final five games of that series. So we're going to get a little hockey coming up in this hour. But coming up next, we're going to get back into the NBA postseason and the NBA Finals. Golden State and Boston. What are the keys for the Celtics? Everybody likes Golden State. But does Boston have a legit chance at making this not only a series, but actually coming out and winning championship number 18? Some thoughts on that when we come back. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Glad you can be with us here on a Wednesday morning.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us again on Wake Up Call on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Don't forget tomorrow, we got Throwback Thursday. Goodness, heading into June. June 1st. I think it's my cousin's birthday. I got to go wish him a happy birthday.
You know what we're one month away from, right?
We're 1 month away from, July and
July 1st, which is, I thought it was today. That's why I had to look it up, but it's not. It's July 1st where one of our favorite players will receive a check.
Oh, yeah. Bobby Bonilla Day. That's right. Bobby Bonilla Day. Isn't it 100 days to the NFL start of the season?
Yes.
Is that what it is? I think I got a text message this week.
I think I did too.
Yeah, it's like 100 for 100, 100 days to the start of the NFL season.
Yep.
That is crazy. I'm not saying that it felt like the Super Bowl was yesterday, because it didn't feel like the Super Bowl was yesterday. But it didn't feel like it was, 10 months ago either.
Right.
I mean, felt like it was a good little change, but not that much.
And you know what else starts tomorrow?
Tomorrow,
our friend Russell Baxter.
Oh, what's he doing?
Well, I've seen it the last couple of years. I'm going to assume that he's going to start it again, where he gives I don't know if it's his top player, maybe most prominent player associated with the number. So like tomorrow will be 99 days.
Got it. Okay.
And so he'll list a player and give a little brief little two sentence bio
Does he do the thing where it's like the player's number?
And yeah, then
he
says, the player's
like,
number.
Hey, so it'd be 99 like
99 J.J. Watt.
J.J. Watt, yeah.
And then he might have an honorable mention and, you know, might be like, was it Mark Gastineau 99?
Sure.
I think.
Yes. I think. Well, I think it was. Well, no, I don't know. I don't remember.
But, you know, he'll do that. He'll do like an honorable mention. Like, I could have said, I could have talked about this guy.
Oh, okay. Good for Russ. I like Russell Baxter.
So, but I think, I'm assuming that's starting tomorrow. Because wow. We haven't had a number 100.
I was telling my wife about that on Sunday. I said, you know, we got this vacation coming up, and then I said, when we come back from vacation, we got a couple of things, and then we'll be right into preview mode.
Yeah,
we'll be right into that. It's coming before you know it, and it's such a. I mean, it is. We all love it, and it's good. It's a good time of year, but it's. It's amazing now, and this was one of the benefits, I will say. I wasn't a fan of the 17-game week schedule, but I thought one of the benefits of extending the Super Bowl to the middle of February, it may only feel like a week, but it really allowed February to be less of a dead sports month than it actually was, because it's always kind of a sports killer the month of February, because the Super Bowl would come so early, like on the second or the third, and then you'd have a whole month of sort of NBA is not quite there, college basketball is not quite there. March then comes in and got a lot of things going on. April comes in, got a lot of things on. May you're dealing with postseason, and June and July you're leaning into football season, but it takes kind of one month, and it sort of lessens its sort of dead impact. And it does, it does make it feel like it's a little bit closer. I feel like we talked about this one. I'm going on this boat, and I was thinking about what am I going to read? And I'm thinking about this Patriots book. It's Better to Be Feared by Seth Wickersham. But is it too early to get preview books, magazines? Are those out yet? Or like Ooh. Even college football magazines? Are they still a little early? So I like those. I don't mind reading those.
I don't know. I think college football needs to figure out what they're going to do with their scheduling.
Right. No kidding. I want to get to the Celtics. I might have to put this off. But the Destin, Florida thing, Nick Saban said, well, I didn't really mean what I said about Texas A&M. They, you know, he's now in spin mode. Remember a couple
of weeks
ago.
The other thing he said, too, is like, I didn't really say anything bad.
Yeah, right. So –
I wasn't criminalizing them.
This is one of those things, man.
I didn't say they did anything wrong.
So when he spoke to the business leaders, he said Texas A&M bought every player. Okay, that's what he said. Now he claims he didn't say anything that he didn't, but he may have said that, but he didn't say that Texas A&M did anything wrong. And we know Jimbo Fisher reacted to that by exploding and calling Nick Saban a narcissist and all of that other stuff.
And I know some secrets you all should know.
Yeah,
just
exactly.
Go ask him.
Yeah, like I'm waiting. I'm ready now to start, you know, naming some things. Right.
Yeah.
Really, really, really angry. Said it was despicable. Never bought anybody. So they go down to the SEC meetings down in Destin, Florida, and the coaches are there, and Saban was asked about it, and he said he says, I didn't really say that anybody did anything wrong. But then a reporter said, you did say that Texas A&M bought every player, but then Saban goes, but I didn't say anybody did anything wrong. And he's trying to spin it a little bit. Now, is he technically right? Yeah, but that's not... Let's go back to those comments against those business leaders. That wasn't what he was trying to do with that comment. He wasn't trying to do it. We said it at the time. He was either doing two things with that comment. One, he was either being really careless and sort of lazy, or he knew exactly what he was doing, trying to tell sort of the business leaders in Alabama, hey, you might want to step up because this is what's going on with Texas A&M. And I think it was the latter. I don't think he was lazy with his words, and I don't think he didn't think it out. I think he was trying to send a little subtle message like, hey, guys, look what's going on over here. They're doing that. We might need to be doing that soon amongst our business leaders here in the state. But the way it was presented, the way it was brought to the public, and the way it was shown – Jimbo Fisher had every right to be angry at the time because it was implying that somehow the school was buying players, which is not allowed. The schools are not paying players. I think this is one of the most underlooked things when it comes to NIL, is that people think like when I hear people say, well, it's about time schools start paying the athletes. They're not paying the athletes. Businesses are paying the athletes. NIL deals come from the business community. It doesn't come from the school. The school still cannot write a check to an athlete playing the game. They cannot do that. So Saban saying that Texas A&M bought their players, Jimbo Fisher had every right to say, I don't care what context it was. I don't care what he really meant by it. He made the statement. If you want, here's where I would be if I was Jimbo Fisher. If you're Nick Saban and you're in Destin, Florida, and you're saying, I didn't say anybody did anything wrong, you should have said that then. You should have said that right then and there, rather than let it float out there that we did something wrong. And against the rules, we're not allowed to pay players. Our business community can pay players. We are not, and we did not. And that's why Jimbo Fisher was so upset. But of course Saban knew when he got to Florida for this thing that this was going to be the one thing everyone was going to talk about. Of course it was. No one's really going to ask him about 8-game versus 9-game schedule. They want to know about your feud with Jimbo Fisher, former assistant, who now has no problems opening up the book of Saban, if there is a book of Saban, right? That becomes a problem. You know, so Saban said he doesn't have any problem with Jimbo Fisher. I think Jimbo Fisher still has a problem with Nick Saban.
I think so too.
I don't think they've made it up. I think he's still ticked because he knows. You know what? I'm sorry. I respect Saban too much to think that he's just an older guy, just doesn't know what he's saying. Just sometimes right. I can't control myself. I just say things and I don't mean them. No, he's not at all. Not at all. I'm not buying that. And if I'm Jimbo Fisher and I know this guy as well as I know this guy, I would say, no. Don't let him play that game where he's just, I don't even know. I'm just a guy saying words. I don't even know what they mean half the time. No. He took a shot. He pointed the arrow at us. He fired that arrow. He knew exactly what he was doing. And if I was Jimbo Fisher, even if Saban said it, the only way I would accept an apology is if Saban really said, man, I am really sorry. But if he comes at me with the spin of, well, technically what I said, it wasn't exactly not true. I just missed. I would say, shut up. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to either come to me completely begging for forgiveness or don't come at all. You're better off not saying a word to me. Just stand on what you said and let's go at it and let's agree to disagree and move on. And I'll stay in my corner and you stay on your corner. We'll meet on the field in November or October. I think it's October when they're going to play. That's what I wouldn't allow him to come at me with, well, you know, I mean, I was trying to say that you didn't do anything wrong. I forgot to add this and I forgot to add, I would say, I don't want to hear it. But boy, oh boy, that's got some meat down there in Destin, Florida, which, as we said yesterday, these meetings that happen in the spring, summer meetings, the ones that happen around this time, May to June, is really have always been about the SEC just spending money. Just making money. Here's how we're doing, guys. We're making a fortune. And that's basically it. This year it's been a little different because they do have NIL that they're trying to sort out, trying to figure out the best way to approach that. They are talking about the possibility of a 9-game conference schedule, which some coaches are going to approve of and some coaches are not going to like. What to do with the rotating schedule? What do you do about traditional rivalries? What do you do about the transfer portal? Is there anything that they can do as a team? I know yesterday there was some buzz about the possibility of Greg Sankey going, you know what, we could have our own playoff rather than be part of this college football playoff that's not expanded to the way we want it. But I think that's almost like, you know what that is? That is, you ever go to a creative meeting at your company? And they go, no idea is a bad idea. Just throw it out on the table. And you're like, I have an idea. Every Friday we should have make your own pizza day. And everybody goes, that could get a little messy. I don't know. And the other guy goes, I don't know. How about better health care and vacation time? And everybody laughs. You know, like this. That sounds like one where they went, what? No idea is a bad idea. Throw everything out on the table. And they go, how about we get out of the college football national playoff? And we have our own playoff. We have our own, like, 8-team SEC battle for greatness. And somebody went, it's not bad. Let's table that, put it off to the side, see what happens. That's basically what I think that is. I don't think that has any chance of coming to fruition. I think the SEC likes getting on the national stage in that playoff. And I like flexing its muscle. I think Greg Sankey loves walking into a room knowing that last year he had two teams in the national title game. And he's had it a couple times for the national title game. There's no other conference like it, man. There really isn't. I mean, you know what? I have a saying that I use with a lot of times in, when I talk about different people. I even if I disagree with somebody completely, if they know who they are, I kind of respect them, right? If they know who they are. Like, if I'm at an event and I see somebody that owns the room, I can sometimes go, that person looks a little arrogant, but they know who they are and they know they own the room. So I got to respect it. I think that's the way with like the SEC. They never pretend that they're just lucky, right? They don't pretend they're like, we're just blessed that the college football gods have shined on our programs and we're taking advantage of this because it doesn't last forever. They're the exact opposite of that. They're like, we've earned this. This is what we do better than any other place in the world. We do college football better than anybody else. I'm sorry if you don't think that, and I'm sorry you can't see that, but we know who we are. We're the kings of the hill. And you want to come at us? Come at us, but we are 14 strong. We are about ready to be 16 strong. Sorry, Vanderbilt. We're actually 15 strong. Like, they just know who they are. Yeah, they know who they are, and everybody else complains about them, whines about them, files complaints against them. But when they walk into the room, they know they're the king. That's the way it is. They know they're the king. And to be honest with you, that man that everybody's pointing to and saying, what exactly did you mean? He's one of the main reasons for it. In fact, he is the main reason for it.
So, I mean, would you say like they're, I guess, passive-aggressive towards him, right? Because they need a kiss his, you know what, and like almost thank him, but at the same time, they can be angry with him.
Yeah, right. Well, I think Sankey can say, hey, be careful. Like, he can say, we're not doing this. We are not going to be accusing one another of buying players, all right?
We are not going to help. We all have that skeleton in our closet.
Right, exactly. We are not going to help other conferences and other programs outside of our club to attack our club. We're not going to do that. We're not going to eat our own. All right. So you guys can battle it out on the recruiting trail, and you can battle it out on the football field and all of those things. But when it comes to integrity and the way we do business, keep your mouth shut, because that's damaging the brand. And we're not damaging the brand. We know who we are. And I think Sankey has every right to say that. All right, it's on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, hey, when you discover a new favorite bottle of Cabernet or Chardonnay at Total Wine & More, you'll discover a whole lot more. So explore the wondrous selection and totally low prices at TotalWine.com, where you'll find what you love and love what you find. Drink responsibly. Yeah, I mean, going back to that SEC thing, I wish I went consistently to SEC Media Days, but once was enough for me. I went one time, and it was such a circus, and it was kind of exciting because it was so much love affair from the people that were there, just the fans that were there to just kind of get a glimpse at players and coaches for the conference. Now, I want to make this clear. I've been around the country, so I've lived in a lot of places, and I do think that people in the Big Ten love the Big Ten, and I do think that people in the Pac-12 genuinely love the Pac-12, but I don't think there's any argument that SEC fans love their conference probably more than fans love their conference. I think as a group, there's something about SEC pride, so much so that one thing that drives me crazy is when I hear, especially here in the South where I live now, and you know, when I was living in Colorado, I would meet Colorado Buffalo fans back when they were in the Big 12, and they would never root for Nebraska, no matter what. And yet I've heard people say that they would root for their rival school in the SEC just to keep the SEC in championship mode. And I think that's insane. I do think that's insane. But when I was down there for SEC Media Days a number of years ago, just seeing Saban in that element reminds you how much of, you know, how much of the boss he kind of is. You know, he really is. It's really remarkable. I mean, when he comes in with those police officers, when he makes his way through that lobby, it is a sight, man. It really is a sight. And if you've never seen it, it is like a, I don't know, it's like a State of the Union. You know when the president goes to a State of the Union address? You know how he like leaves the White House to go to Congress? And it's like 15 police cars and limousines, and he kind of marches him in, and he gets in there, and then he gets to the place. And then they go, "The President of the United States!" Everybody stands up, and he walks down to give it. It has a similar vibe to it, man.
What you're saying is that he's not going to be dropped off. Remember, I think it was last year that you were showing all the coaches being dropped off on a corner.
Yeah, right.
In front of a hotel, and people were, you know, trying to get interviews, and like, oh, this guy was nice. This guy was not.
Right.
Saban's not getting dropped off on a corner, and no one's, you know, hounding him for anything.
He is. It's a trip to watch, man. It is really, really a sight. And again, I know there's some people out there who have been to many more of these than me. So I've got a buddy of mine who goes every year to that. Every year, he's a fan. He's not a media guy. He just we don't live that far from Birmingham area. So he goes. He loves Alabama in the worst way. He's my friend I told you about who will just text me randomly at various times during the football season to complain about Alabama getting hosed when they won 48-4 or 48-3, but that last touchdown should have counted. He's that guy. He goes down every year just to hang out. You know, loves it down there. Loves just the atmosphere of it all. He loves it. And people do. But This is not that. What's going on now is like legit business. Media days are exactly what they are. They're media days. It's an opportunity for coaches and players to talk about the upcoming season, to talk about their team, what they're excited about. Every coach, and you go to any media days, and I've been to a bunch of them in different conferences, everyone's you would love one coach to go, "We are going to stink. There's no way around it. We lost a couple of players to graduation, and we just don't have the talent to replace them. So it's going to be a long year. We are not excited about it. We're probably going to lose by double digits every single game. So take that to the bank. I'm leaving." Of course they don't do that. Of course they say how excited they are. They think this guy is going to play well. They think the schedule works out for them. They're really excited about the opportunity to play this team, that team, whatever it may be. That's what it is. What they're doing today, that's not what they're doing. What they're doing today, even though the media is there, they are trying to conduct business. They are trying to figure out the business of what they're doing. You know, like I said, NIL, possible ways of transfer portal, things like that. Like the business of college football within the conference. They're sorting it out a little bit. And don't get me wrong, there's media availability, and they'll talk about some different things, but that's what's going on right now. So, all right, we're going to talk NHL because last night the Western Conference Finals got underway. And then we've got Dennis Bernstein's joining up. He's from the fourth period. He's going to come up in just a couple of minutes. We've got the Eastern Conference Finals tonight, Tampa Bay and New York. Now, we had Dennis on. When did we have him on? Right when the playoffs started?
Yes.
Right just when the playoffs started.
About a month ago.
So if you didn't listen to that, if you're kind of new to the program or you missed that particular day, you guys know that every guest that we have on this show, the one reason I like them is if they're enthusiastic about what they cover. Even if I'm not as enthusiastic about what they cover, if they are enthusiastic about what they cover, I love it. I love it. I can get somebody on. Like if we got a tennis guy on and he is telling me this French Open is the greatest thing he knows, then I'll respect it. Dennis Bernstein loves hockey, I think, as much as anybody we have ever had on this show loving their sport. I don't think that's hyperbole. Would you agree?
No, that's not hyperbole at all.
I don't think it's hyperbole. He loves hockey like nobody else loves their sport. And I'm glad he's coming on because I think these two conference finals could be absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, you mean not all 14 goal games?
Right. We'll get his thoughts on the goal onslaught between the Avalanche and the Oilers last night, as well as thoughts on Lightning Rangers when we continue.
is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. So last night, boy, what an onslaught that game was. 8-6, Colorado beats Edmonton tonight, Tampa Bay and New York. Dennis Bernstein joins us the fourth period to talk NHL Stanley Cup playoffs. How are you, Dennis? Thanks for joining us.
Great, Tony. Thanks for the kind words before. Absolutely passionate. Great to get up early and talk hockey with you.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Like I said, I don't care what you cover. If you bring a passion, I'll always respect it, and you absolutely do, as equal as anybody we've had on this program. So what was your takeaway last night? How should we view a game like that that is not the normal hockey game? An 8-6 game is outside of that parameter, but what's the takeaway out of that?
I think, Tony, what happened last night is they got the time machine in the Ball Arena last night in Denver, and we went back to the 80s. So yeah. That was a 1980s game. That, if you look at the score, I think it was the second highest scoring conference final game. And if you look at the other games, they were all in 1985, 1986. So Edmonton's comfortable scoring 6 goals and losing in game one. They did it against Calgary. They're 0-3 in game one, actually, in this playoff. So to me, not surprised. A new goaltending and defense was going to be an issue. And as good as Colorado is, Tony, and they may win the Cup, they're not a shutdown defending team. If you go back to last series against St. Louis, in game 5 at home, they were up by 3 goals, wound up losing that game in overtime, didn't play great in game 6. And now the Darcy Kuemper injury and Jared Bednar, the coach of the Avalanche, kind of hinted that he's going to miss some time. That's a huge thing for the Avalanche because they need better goaltending, and I don't think they're going to get it from Pavel Francouz. So Edmonton's comfortable playing those type of games. Of course, they're going to have to tighten up defensively if they want to win the series. But I really give Edmonton a puncher's chance to win the series. And when I watched it last night when they're down 7-3, they never quit on a game. This is a very different team mentally than the Edmonton Oilers of the past. And it's led by Connor McDavid, obviously, and Leon Draisaitl. So I'll tell you this, Tony. Tonight, I don't think it's going to be 8-6 in New York at Madison Square Garden.
Is that Edmonton goalie Mike Smith? Is that why? I mean, I've seen plenty of athletes in a series who have bad outings say it's just one game, I'm going to move on. And then sometimes I believe them and other times I don't believe them. But when I watched Mike Smith speak, I said, I believe him. I think this is just a throwaway game for him and he comes back and plays well.
Well, again, same thing happened in game one against Calgary. They went back to him. Here's the thing, when you put Koskinen in and you look at his numbers, and he only gave up one goal, wound up being the losing goalie, like, you know, a pitcher that gives up one run in relief in baseball. But my problem with Koskinen is when it's, the pressure's not on and it's 7-3 and you're making saves, fine. You need a better start. So, yeah, Tony, I think they'll go back to Mike Smith. There's no reason they haven't. It was a bad outing. It was a bad and it was a bad performance in front of them as well. That's a typical Edmonton game one. They don't play well in game one. So I think they'll go back to Mike Smith in game two, try to get a split, go back to Edmonton 1-1 for game three.
All right, let's talk about the Avalanche, because that was the one thing that people have been saying about them all season into this play. They're quick strike. They score quick. Yep. They've got a lot of weapons. Obviously was on display last night. But from the defensive side of it, they were just as lacking as Edmonton was. Is that a concern?
Yeah, it's very much a concern. It's a concern in net because Pavel Francouz, I don't think, is going to win them a title, even if they get past Edmonton. I think the one difference for Colorado or for Edmonton playing Colorado, Tony, is the first two rounds Edmonton played, they didn't have a Cale Makar in either one of the teams. Los Angeles and Calgary did not have this dynamic offensive force on the blue line of Cale Makar. He had a goal and 2 assists last night. You saw him. He's a difference maker. But if you're going to play that type of defense, Tony, like, you might get out of this round, but you can't do that in the Cup final. So to me, at some point, it's going to bite them. Jared Bednar has to figure it out. And he has to figure out I think it's a mental approach. As I mentioned, I saw the same thing against St. Louis last round. I'm seeing it again here. At 7-3, Tony, that game, if you're a championship team, it should be 8-3. You shouldn't be sweating 7-6 at the end and have to get an empty net goal to win. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of concerns about this team, and that's the problem with teams like that. Like, they look like the Golden State Warriors of the NHL. I thought Florida Panthers were, but they're not because they're out now. They only scored 3 goals against Tampa in the last round. But you have to, at some point, take your foot off the gas pedal, not look to score more goals, but prevent goals. So, yeah, I'm concerned about the defensive effort. I'm very concerned if Darcy Kuemper is going to be out for a couple of games here in this round. Again, it opens the door for Edmonton to win the series and go on to the Cup final.
You make a really good point, because for like the 12 minutes of the third period, where that was a one-goal game, before the empty netter that made it a two-goal cushion with less than a minute remaining. You're right. They were up 7-3, and they ended up playing 12 minutes in the third period, holding on to a one-goal lead that could have evaporated as quickly as the three-goal lead did.
And at home, if they get a play like that on the road in Edmonton, it's going to be a full house. It's going to be crazy at Rogers Arena. I'll be up for game series 3 and 4. It's going to be a long series, Tony. Like, if they don't get better defensively, if they don't win the next game 3-1 or something like that, it's going to be a long series. It's going to be 6 or 7 game. Or it's something that on paper it shouldn't be, because pound for pound, Colorado has the better team. But the way they play and their style that they play, that's not championship. That's not how you win a Stanley Cup. The other teams in the East, that's more representative of what you need to win all 4 rounds in 16 games in the NHL playoffs.
All right, let's go to the East, where tonight Tampa Bay will take on the Rangers at Madison Square Garden. Both teams getting to this game completely different. The Lightning with a 4-game sweep over the Panthers, and then a tough series for the Rangers, but they do win 4 of the final 5 games in that to beat Carolina. In terms of an edge, I don't know if you take anything out of regular season matchups. The Rangers beat the Lightning in all 3 regular season games. Means little, means a lot, means everything. I have no idea, but how do you see that series?
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're a casual fan watching this game tonight, Tony, you have to downshift. We were in like 5th gear last night in that game. You're probably going to go the 1st or 2nd gear tonight. So it's going to be 3-2, 2-1, 1-0. I don't take a lot of – the Rangers won all 3 games in the series, but game 1, Brian Elliott played. Game 3, they didn't have their full lineup. Now, the one caveat is, Tony, when they go to the ice tonight, Tampa would have been off for 9 days. So it's that whole thing about rest versus rust. They dispatched Florida in 4 games, Tampa Bay. Is that good or bad? For an older team, I would think it's good. They still don't have Braden Point. The bumps and bruises that you have certainly will help, but that's a long time to be off in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And you're playing a Ranger team that, unlike Colorado last night, they know how to close the show. They closed the show big time in Carolina in that 6-2 victory. So tonight, I got to give to the edge to the Rangers, because I think the key to this, unlike scoring in the other conference final, this is about a matchup of goaltenders. Shesterkin and Vasilevsky, the two best in the game right now. They can go save for save. So it's going to be which team is more opportunistic, which team can have better special teams. I think that's the key to this series. The one thing about the Rangers, like, they finished well, but remember, and Ranger fans don't want to hear this, Tony, but you have to say it. Like, who did they beat in net in the first 2 series? They beat Louis Domingue, they beat an injured Tristan Derry, they beat Antti Raanta, who ended up getting hurt, and they beat a Russian rookie goaltender. This is a very different animal. And my question, and I've said this at the beginning of the playoffs after Tampa beat Toronto in Game 7, who's going to beat this team, who's going to beat this goalie, and who's going to beat this coach 4 games out of 7?
Right.
This is a monumental step up in class for the Rangers in the series. Doesn't mean they can't win. Doesn't mean they don't have a puncher's chance. But this is a very different animal they're facing in the Tampa Bay Lightning.
I know he had a goal in Game 7, but where was Chris Kreider in that entire series?
Well, he showed up at Game 7 when they really needed him.
Right, when they needed him, he showed up. Can they get away with that against Tampa Bay? Can they get away with Chris Kreider not scoring goals in the early part of this series and maybe catch on late?
I think they can, Tony, because I don't think they're going to be 4-3, 5-4 games. So if Chris isn't going to score, then you got to have Panarin, you got to have Zibanejad, you got to have Adam Fox. So they have enough scorers. But if one guy's not on board right now with respect to his offense, I think they're going to get away with it, because it's not like the other series. Like, you need everybody all in to win that Edmonton-Colorado series. I think they could do it, because a 2-1 game, if you got to go from Zibanejad and Panarin, you can still win the game if Shesterkin's playing like Shesterkin. So I don't think it's as vital to the Rangers' chances that one particular guy, if they all don't score, then yeah, that's going to be a problem. So they need one or two players to get hot. And the one guy under the radar, Tony, who's going to be important for the Rangers, who has been talked a lot about, is Ryan Strome, their second-line center. If he can produce for them, they absolutely can win the series. I picked them to win this series in 6. I know that, look, Tampa Bay's a great team. They won the last series, Tony, without getting a game-winning goal from Kucherov, Stamkos, or Hedman. And that says a lot about this team, their depth, the goaltending, the defense. Ryan McDonough's been great. So to me, certainly Tampa Bay should be the favorite in this series. But again, like Edmonton, I think the Rangers have a legitimate chance to escape this round and go on to the Cup final.
How impressive was it? I mean, was there some underlying circumstance that led to a 4-game sweep? I thought Florida was outstanding, and then they ran into a team that just knocked them out in 4 games.
Tony, when it gets to game 83, the first two 82 games don't matter. So when you win the President's Trophy and you get 120 points and you score all the goals, it doesn't matter. The problem is with the Florida Panthers, they're not ready to win yet. And Tampa Bay has won. That's the big difference. It just changed. Florida looked like Tampa Bay did 4 years ago, and it got knocked out against the Columbus Blue Jackets. That's what they just haven't learned the lessons of what it takes to win games. They didn't win close games. They didn't get a save in the big spot. And they didn't score a power play goal. Like the entire series, this is a team that had the most goals in the NHL, couldn't score to save their life. And you saw that with Carolina as well. It's just a very different game. You don't get as much room to operate, right? You have to finish on your chances. Like you're not getting big-time opportunities against Tampa Bay. And then you have a goalie who, when he gets in a game, a clinching game, Tony, he smells it. Like he goes, okay, yeah, this is a clinching game. He had 49 saves against Florida in the clinching game. Like, this is a different animal. This is a team that is comfortable. If they lose game one tonight in the Garden, they won't care, because against Toronto, they did the same thing. They lost game one in Toronto. They came back and bounced back in game two. I think the pivotal game in the series is not tonight because of the rest and the rush factor for Tampa. I think it's game two. So if Tampa can get a split, they'll be super confident going back to Tampa for game three.
All right, Dennis, great stuff as always. Really appreciate you coming on, and we'll probably will try to reach you again when we get to the Stanley Cup Finals. Thanks again, my friend.
Sounds great, Tony. Thanks for the time. I appreciate being on Sports Map with you.
You got it. Dennis Bernstein again, fourth period on the NHL. Love it. I love it. I mean, just good. Tonight's game should be fantastic. I mean, I think he's right. This is two really, really good goaltenders, Shesterkin and Vasilevskiy. I think that's going to be the key. And again, I don't know what last night. He said both teams don't play that great defense. I mean, 8-6 is sort of something that's way outside the norm. But if you're looking for the best team of the four, I don't know where I'm probably leaning towards Tampa Bay. They just know how to play in the playoffs. They just know how to do it in the postseason. I like what he said. You play 82 games in the regular season, the 83rd doesn't matter. And that's what happened with Florida. They won the President's Cup, but it didn't matter. Tampa Bay just knows how to beat you. They just know how to take you down.
They're like the Warriors.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
exactly right.
I feel like we're talking about them all the time.
Yeah.
What's the hockey equivalent for any given Sunday?
Yeah, good question, right?
Because that's what the Rangers are. Yeah, I mean, that's the way Dennis was describing it. It's like any given Sunday.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got a puncher's chance.
They do. Tampa Bay, right?
Any
back
given Wednesday and then Friday.
You know what? And the whole thing too is that, you know, you go through these regular when you're a champion, right? And we talk about this with Kansas City Chiefs. It happens in every sport.
Yeah.
When you win a championship, you come back the next year and you're just like, God, we got to go through this. Blah, 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 just get me to the playoffs. The Lightning had some up and down moments. You know, they didn't dominate or anything like that. But you know what? They get to this spot. They got a goaltender that wins games. They got guys who know how to put it in the net. They haven't lost a playoff series in 2 years. And they're the two-time defending champs. And here they are again. They just took out the top team in the East with ease.
With ease. That's the scary part, right?
And they don't have any problem with this series starting on the road. At Madison Square Garden, none.
It was like they were one of those teams that, you know, it's like, well, we'll just kind of, you know, walk through the season.
Right, exactly.
You know, we need to do is just make the playoffs. We don't care what seed we are.
Gonna be fun. Gonna be a fun ride for the next couple of games here in the conference finals. All right, we'll wrap up the hour as we continue with Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Don't forget, tomorrow we got Throwback Thursday. I think we've landed one. We normally discuss it, but we landed one for tomorrow, so you want to make sure you catch us tomorrow for that. So, good stuff from Dennis Bernstein on the Stanley Cup playoffs. He says it's going to be in Edmonton. That's going to be electric. That's going to be great.
Edmonton's got to win, right?
Well,
I don't want to take anything. I know you covered the Avalanche for years, but
kind of pulling for the Avs. But I get it. I get why the sentimental pick is Edmonton.
Well, I'm not even sentimental about Edmonton, the town. I'm just saying for Canada.
Yeah, for the country.
For the country.
Yeah, you know, it really is.
Just give them some hope.
Watch if you have a chance to watch the game, which I guess when is game two tomorrow night? Yeah, tomorrow night. Just watch them sing the Canadian national anthem. It is pretty, it's pretty emotional. They get really into it. So as long as they're not booing our national anthem. Remember when we had that back and forth?
Yeah.
A while back, I think it was Montreal and Boston. They were doing that. Oh, wait a minute. One of them didn't. I think Montreal, they booed the Canadian national anthem, and I think Montreal sang our national anthem in some sort of response. I can't quite remember, but we've had a few of those kind of stories. But you're right. It is really
fun. And you always
really
get the viral video of when the mic cuts out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
oh,
the
yeah.
The fans finish it.
Yeah. Well, that's really good, by the way.
Yeah. Wasn't one in Canada and they finished our national anthem? We're like, good on you guys.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I know they sang their own once in a response. I want to say it was Anaheim.
Yeah.
It was like Anaheim, Calgary or something. It was one of those series where the guy started O Canada and put his mic down, and everybody sang the rest.
Hey, man, and that's
a pretty emotional moment.
That is why they are good upstairs neighbors.
Yeah, yeah, pretty good.
They don't make too much noise. We don't have to bang on the ceiling to say, quiet down, guys.
Well, never forget, the Colorado Avalanche were once the Quebec Nordiques. So, and Quebec Nordiques, they were a feisty, feisty team. And as soon as they left Quebec, they watched their rival Montreal win all those cups all those decades. As soon as they left, Colorado won the cup. It's the first year they were the Colorado Avalanche. The Avalanche won the cup. Nuts.